It's just gone 12 o'clock, and following the announcement last night that Chokete Faki, former Auditor General and Chair of Resilience Independent Review, had concluded his report into the allegations that had been made against the company in the Resilience Stable. He joins me now on the phone to discuss these things. Good afternoon, Mr. Faki.
Good afternoon to you, Warren, and good afternoon to the listeners as well.
Perhaps we can just start with the scope. Can you just give us what the scope was of the review and what you were tasked to look at, and why you agreed to it?
Okay. So, firstly, I mean, the scope is spelled out in the report that was issued last night, but it essentially covered a period of 1 January 2017 to 28 February 2018, which is a 14-month period. You know, the term of reference that was given to me spoke about a possible 6 months from June to December, but I've decided to extend that term because of the activities that's taken place over this period. Secondly, the scope was predominantly to cover the allegations that were contained in the four reports that was circulated early in the year. But when I looked at those four reports, there were a number of commentaries and allegations made in those reports. But in essence, when you go through the heart of the issues that's been put into those reports, the allegations revolve around the high valuation of the company that arose from insider-directed or insider-related transactions in the group company shares to deliberately inflate the share price and volume that were traded. And the second part of it was to look at whether there was any sort of misconduct on the part of the executives. There were other issues that were also raised in the allegation report, but we did not look at that. For example, the issues around the net asset value, the accounting treatment of the Siaka Trust. Our view on that was that those matters are best dealt with because the books of these companies get audited, and the auditors, you know, have issued an audit opinion on those things. So if there was any irregularity, that they would have picked it up. So we didn't cover those aspects.
Okay, I understand that the 361 report was the initial focus of the review. You indicated on Friday that you were going to attempt to meet with 361. Did that happen?
No, it didn't happen. We've been exchanging communication between myself and the director of 361. I've proposed a meeting for Monday because I needed to finalize the report. By Tuesday there was a board meeting yesterday, and I needed to make sure that I've got the report ready for the board. As you would know, that there was already an expectation that this report would be finalized last week on Friday and had to be extended as well. So the director of 361 wanted to bring his counsel with, the senior counsel with, to the interview, and I've agreed to that, but his senior counsel was not available until Thursday this week. So, indicated to him last night that I'm still happy to meet up with him if his senior counsel is available to hear what additional information they have, and if they bring something substantial, then I can take that to the board and ask them to reconsider.
Okay, so
we didn't meet on Monday, but my doors are still open.
Okay, but you've provided the. I understand that this you finalized this review now. So if you learned something at that meeting that would change your mind, how would you then amend the review?
I finalized the review, but if you look at the statement that's been made in the statement as well, that if there is anybody, not only 361, that has anything significant, right, that's not been covered in that report, because we've looked at all the issues covered in those reports. If there's anything significant that they've had that wasn't covered in the report, then I'm happy to engage them. They must bring that evidence through to me, and then I will take that to the board and turn around and say, look, whilst my report has been finalized, it's been finalized on the information, there's more information that's now come to fore, and I do believe you people need to consider that.
Okay, so just to be clear, are you scheduled to meet with 361 at the moment?
I have put a request through to them yesterday via email, asking that I will make myself available on Thursday as they originally proposed. I'm still waiting for a confirmation. So I haven't received any confirmation yet.
Okay, great. Just coming around to these K companies, Mr. Faki, because this was quite interesting and certainly we covered it as well. You know, I wanted to just understand this relationship between this Mr. Hafner and this Mr. Oberholzer, because following inquiries that we made, we understood that Mr. Oberholzer was the sole director of these four K2012 companies. To me, it appears that Mr. Hafner was appearing to conceal his identity using these K companies. What were your findings in respect of that?
So our findings has been that, yes, as you've indicated, Mr. Oberholzer is the director of those four K companies.
Got Mr. Faki back. Sorry, Mr. Faki, we lost you there.
I don't know what happened yet.
So we asked the question around Mr. Oberholzer, and as we've since learned from your review that Mr. Rock Hafner, appears to be the person providing the funding to these K companies. What were your findings there?
So basically, yeah, so that's what we found, that he is providing the funding to the K companies. But what we've also picked up, that the ultimate beneficiary of these K companies is the Hafner family. So he is the shareholder of those companies. And Mr. Oberholzer is the director of this company. Not he himself. His family trust is the ultimate beneficiary of those companies. And our focus with that engagement was, to a large extent, to make sure that there was no funding being provided either by resilient directors or associated directors, people associated with resilient.
Okay, so just to get this right, so you're saying the Hafner Family Trust was the shareholder in those K companies?
Hello?
Yes, hi, Mr. Faki. You were saying that the family trusts controlled by Mr. Hafner were the sole shareholder of those companies?
Yeah, ultimate beneficiary, that's correct.
Okay. Now that contrasts quite starkly with what Mr. Oberholzer told us himself. He said he was the sole shareholder of those companies.
Well, I can't. I mean, that's what we've picked up. So you need to take that up with Mr. Oberholzer.
Okay, I'll do that. Then just on Mr. Hafner. I mean, this name appears now. Who is he, and what, if any, links does he have to Des De Beer and executives of Resilient?
Again, you know, they have a long-standing relationship from the past, but we couldn't pick up anything, right, when it comes to the issue of either insider information being provided to Hafner or any funding being given to Hafner to trade through this K company. We couldn't pick up any evidence to that effect. But yes, Mr. Hafner has had a long-standing business relationship with the CEO here and that kind of thing. But you know that we didn't pick up anything else, you know, that confirms that there's been funding that's been taking place or insider information that's been transferred. And we've got confirmatory affidavits to this effect from all sides.
Okay, so but just coming back, I think in the review you said that Mr. Hafner had supplied lending to Mr. Oberholzer in the K companies, and now you're saying that Mr. Hafner, in fact, his family trust was the sole shareholder in the companies.
Yeah, now I'm saying to you that Mr. Hafner, through the RCG company that he owns, provided financing to the K companies, right? And I'm telling you that the ultimate beneficiary, right, is of the Hafner associated entity, which is the RCG companies, the ultimate beneficiary of that RCG company is a family trust. If you know. So Mr. Hafner through RCG has provided funding through to the K company. And we also look to see who the beneficiaries of the K companies were, right? and who the beneficiaries of the RCG was. So what I'm telling you, the ultimate beneficiary of the Hafner-associated entity, which is RCG, is his family trust.
Okay, I've got that. Did you not think it was suspicious, though, that this Mr. Hafner would lend literally billions of rands worth to Mr. Oberholzer, who I understand was at one time employed as a groundsman at the Kyalami Schools Group?
Look, we've asked the question, and there was personal reasons that was provided to us, which I'm not privy to share in the public domain, as to why he's used those K companies and Mr. Oberholzer to do his investment.
Mr. Fokey, I think we've been around the block a couple of times. I mean, to me, this looks like blatant fronting. And if I worked at the FIC or SARS, I would suggest that this was perhaps something to do with tax evasion or money laundering.
Yeah, but that's my purview to a large extent, as I indicated to you. Look at the scope of my investigation was to look at whether there's been any association either with Resilium or with the directors executives of Resilium or the associated that had been involved in this scheme, and that's what my focus has been. I think the aspect that you're referring to was not within the scope of my review. I mean, SARS wants to take that up, and I'll take it up because I have provided that information in my report.
Mr. Hafner, does he have close personal links to Mr. De Beer?
Sorry?
Does Mr. Hafner have close personal links or personal ties to Des De Beer, the CEO of Resilient?
Not anymore. He used to have that in the past, but not anymore. Since, I think, around 2013, they have not had any relationship.
Okay, so what we've learned is that the K2012 companies, ultimately the beneficial owner or controller is a Rock Hafner Family Trust. Did you find that the K2012 companies participated regularly in the book builds of the Resilient Stable during the course of the year?
They've participated in both open market trade as well as book builds. They were not only solely participating in the book builds only, they participated in everything. And we've looked at the book build process, by the way, as a result of, and I know where that question is coming from, and you'll find that in my report, we have also, to cover the other angle, looked at the book build process to make sure that process was sound and not open to any undue manipulation. And we're comfortable that the book build process is run independently by Java Capital, and that process is quite thorough and sound.
So the K2012 companies would have got access, would have got allocations to book builds during the course of the year, but you say that was all above board.
And they would not have gone through directly through to Java. They would have gone through a stock broker because Java didn't allocate directly to them. Yeah.
Did you know if Mr. Oberholzer was in fact employed at one time at the Kyalami Schools?
No, I'm not aware of that.
Okay, great. And then just the conclusion. So you've alluded to, is the full report going to be made available?
No, I don't think the full report will be made available. I think what has been provided here is a summary and an extract of the report itself, and that's what we put out into the public domain.
Okay.
Because my responsibility and my mandate, right, and was to issue a report to the board, right, not to the public. My mandate was to issue a report to the board, and that's what I've done.
Okay. Just one other question. You said that the share activity figures mentioned in the reports as share trading activities, and these obviously the reports compiled by 361, Arcam, and Navigari, are not correct. Why was this? How did you get to that conclusion? Why were they incorrect?
The reason why they were incorrect, because we verified all the share movements to the broker notes, and we've gone through quite a bit of detail, and we've reconciled all the share movements and activities by the companies. I can't tell you how and where those three reports, and you know, in particular the ARCAM report, which made a statement of 122 billion rand. You know, that really is outrageous in terms of the number that's been quoted. And clearly, we can turn around and say that those figures that's been quoted there are not in line with what we've picked up, and therefore they're not correct.
Yes, but I think I'm asking, how do you make that conclusion?
Because of the verification I did internally. I mean, I verified all the movements internally. So I'm just saying that my verification does not reconcile to the numbers and the figures that's been quoted in those three reports. I can't say how they've compiled it. I think that what they have done is they may have taken some share movements or share trades. And that's my point that I'm trying to make, that we can confirm that the share trade, and we've looked at the share register as well, and we can confirm that the numbers that we put into our report, that I've got in my report, does not tie back to the numbers that's encoded in that. And that I'm concluding on that basis. And I've verified these numbers. I don't know how they've compiled their numbers. So you need to go back to them and ask them how they've compiled their numbers. But I can tell you, as far as share trade is concerned, those numbers don't tie up at all. There were a lot of movements, and there's movements taking place for good reason, for good business reasons, and I'm not sure if that's been identified as a share trade in their calculation.
Yeah, it's a bit tough for the public and the investor, Mr. Farke, because we basically have to take your word for it, because you're not going to be releasing that information or the report, whereas ARCAM, for instance, has. And I would have thought that part of your job in this review was to review those reports and form a very detailed response to why they would have been misguided or overestimated or incorrect in their assumptions.
Yeah. I've got no further comments to make on that.
Okay. Then let's just round out, I think, the interview. I think we've run over time here, but just you indicated you'd be making recommendations to the board of the company. Could you give us a bit of insight as to what those recommendations are?
Those recommendations are predominantly around the issues of cross-holding and those kinds of things between Fortress and which is very much very alive in the public domain at the moment, and some of the concerns that's coming through. We haven't picked up anything irregular there, but what we're saying that from a cleaning up of the company, I think it may be appropriate for them to consider the cross-holding between Fortress and Resilient. They need to also clean up the cross-holding, shareholding within the Siaka Trust and that kind of thing. And from what I could gather, that they have, in actual fact, had a board meeting to try and tidy up some of those things.
Okay. I appreciate your time, Mr. Farke. Perhaps I could make a request that you do consider making that report available, so that obviously everyone with sitting with reports from ARCAM and 361 on one side and your review on the other can...
But you got a good summary of the report from the report. So I don't know how much more you need. You know, there's a lot of personal information in my detailed report, right? And I have also extracted a lot of stuff that people have given to me in confidence. And I'm not, I can't just make the report available to the public. And what we've decided to do is give information that we believe would provide some comfort to the public in terms of, one, the scope of the work that I've done, what I've covered in the work, and what the findings are. And I think, to me, that's sufficient for the public to know that the work has been just about been complete. It's still open. If there's people that bring more evidence, and in fact, I've just been told by my colleague Tony that what did he say, Tony? Okay, I've just received an email hot off the press for your information from the CEO, from the director of 361, saying Your invitation now to meet us has delivered your report having regard to the view. So he's not going to, he's essentially saying that he's decided that he's not going to meet us. Is that correct?
Yes, we are.
So we have come out and offered him that. So, I mean, really, if he wants to come through, I'm still, my door is still open. But, I had to do what I had to do as far as the report is concerned and get the report out. I wasn't going to allow that meeting to delay my report process. If you've got something substantial, and I've offered that to him over the weekend, I told him that if you've got anything substantial, he can please, I know his attorney is not, his senior counsel is not available. I've asked him to send something through by email through to me, and I'll definitely consider that, before I finalize my report, and he chose not to send anything through to me either. So he was insisting on a meeting. I sent him an email yesterday offering him to meet tomorrow, but he's just sent an email now to us saying that the fact that the report is delivered, I don't know, he's not interested in meeting us. But that's the message that we got now.
Okay, I mean, I think it's just, yeah, I think obviously the problem is that these reports are highly technical, very comprehensive. What I've been left with is from this interview is that we basically just have to take your word that those guys are wrong and that your assumptions and calculations are correct.
Sure. All I'm saying there, Warren, is that some of the numbers that bandied around in the report, right? That's what I'm saying. Some of the numbers that they bandied around in the report, I think that, if a reader doesn't understand the difference between share movement, share trade, and book build and how book build processes work and where there has been a new allocation of shares in the case of, I think it was in the case of Siaka, it's misleading that people will think that that's the number of shares that was traded with the intention of manipulating the market or moving the market. And that's all I'm trying to say, that we, that should have been put into correct context, because it's predominantly the share trade that's traded in the market that we believe one has got any potential to move the market or to influence the market.
Okay, I understand your positions. Obviously, you're just trying to understand the quantum, so if it's not 125 billion, is it 100 billion? Is it 50 billion? Is it 30 billion?
But the bottom line is, whatever that number is, my report is saying that there was no intention to manipulate, there was no manipulation of the market, and I think that's the bottom line. As to what the quantum is, there has been some movements, and we verified those movements, and we're happy that the reasons provided for those movements. So all I'm saying, what the reader needs to be comfortable with, that we went through a proper process to interrogate and verify those movements, and that there was no manipulation in the market. Because that's the ultimate aim, is that the impression that was created, that there's a movement or that those share trades in actual fact boosted the market or moved the market. And we're saying we could find absolutely no evidence to that effect. And to me, that's the critical outcome from there. Otherwise you're going to start looking at this and making your call, making my call. And I think that's important, that there was no, and if you look at my conclusion, that's what I've summarized in there.
Okay. I appreciate that. It's just, it's tough. We've got some very clever people at some of these institutions looking at this thing with the same sort of public information. But thank you very much for your time today, Mr. Faki.
No problem, Warren. Thanks for the call, and we wish you all the best as well. Thanks.
Okay, great. So that was Mr. Shaket Faki, former Auditor General and Chair of Resilience Independent Review, giving us his answers to the questions that we put to him. We'll be back in a second.